Entertaining an audience of Australians, of course, used to be to get an audience of Australians laughing, you just had to talk about how England played cricket. But nowadays we just weep, I think, jointly. So let's leave that topic alone. Despite my accent, I'm a European. And I'm the head of science, director of science in the European Space Agency. And I don't know how many of you have heard of the European Space Agency. It's called ESA, E-S-A, ESA. It was formed 1975, so quite a long time ago. 25 years ago, however, 6 years after the Americans had been wandering around on the moon, so you might say Europe was a bit late getting its act together. And in fact, Europe was late getting its act together, but it's something that perhaps Australians might think about, because the individual European nations were interested in space the minute that Sputnik was launched, the first Russian spaceship in 1957. The question is, they didn't know how to get into space because space requires a lot of effort, it's expensive, and by and large, nobody knew quite how to share the responsibilities. It's entertaining for me as an Englishman that in 1960, Britain was looking at three different ways to go forward in space. I'll tell you what they are, but I want you to think first. What do you think that Britain would have done about getting into space, knowing that it couldn't do it on its own in 1960? That's over 40 years ago. Well, it felt it had three options, and it looked at all three. Number one, which was actually the first option they pursued, was to cooperate with the Americans. And indeed, using the special relationship between Britain and the US, six British spacecraft were launched using American rockets. They were called Ariel 1, Ariel 2, and you can guess what the other four were called. After that, there was something of a hiatus. But the British also pursued two other routes in 1960. The second route was to talk to Europe, and indeed, a few years later, around 1963, two European organizations were founded, the European Space Research Organization, which was based on the fact that Europe had got together to compete in nuclear science with an outfit called CERN, which, as you probably now know, is now the dominant particle physics research laboratory on Earth. At the time, of course, it was number three or number four to various American laboratories. And then there was a third option. And the third option is one that I always like to think about because it went absolutely nowhere. And yet, 50 years earlier, if space technology had arrived in 1900 instead of 1950, it would have been the one that Britain would have followed, and it would have made a vast difference to Australia. And that was in 1960, at Lancaster House in London, there was a Commonwealth Space Conference with representatives from, needless to say, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, India, Pakistan, South Africa, which was still in the Commonwealth at that time, and two other African nations, I think it was Kenya and Nigeria. I know about this because I've got a friend from New Zealand who was a New Zealand delegate. He was sent along to this affair because he happened to be in London, and so it would save New Zealand the cost of sending him. I mean, he was visiting his mum, I think, or something like that. Just for fun, because you're Australians, or most of you, and just for fun, think 50 years earlier, Australia would have just become Australia. But on the other hand, the links between Australia, Canada, Britain, South Africa, and the other countries I mentioned were extremely tight, because there was a British Empire that kind of held things together and was the dominant power on the earth. And I've always wondered what would have happened if space technology had become available in 1901 instead of 1951. That's just something you can think about, take it home tonight. What I can tell you is it would have made a vast difference to Australia, because it's blindingly obvious to me that Australia would have been the center of any British imperial space program. It's also blindingly obvious that the first Briton that landed on the moon wouldn't have said, "This is one small step for mankind," but it would have claimed it for good King George or Edward or whatever, with a Union Jack instead of the Stars and Stripes. I suspect things would have been radically different in many other ways. But anyhow, I was just here to entertain you, and that was the entertainment. It's over.